21st Century Radio is sponsored by Hieronymus & Company. Now more of 21st Century Radio with your host, Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
Look up your chimney, the sky ain't blue, it's kind of yellow, you know it's true.
Listen to them. This is the Traveling Wilburys, friends. This is the greatest rock group ever. Listen to this carefully. Sit up straight. Wear a tie. Comb your hair. Shine your shoes. All right. Thank you very much. That's what the Traveling Wilburys did every day. Every day. That's the kind of things they did as soon as they woke up. Welcome back to 21st Century Radio. I'm what's left of Dr. Bob Hieronymus, a lowly PhD hanging out in this part of the universe. And tonight I know where I am. Indeed. And, of course, our executive producer and research assistant, who is the boss, is Laura Kortner. And our engineer is Kristen Hagerick. Well, this hour is dedicated to my first benefactor, Mary Haskins Milholland, who was an amateur Egyptologist and mentor of mine, who shared with me the importance of the pharaoh Akhenaten, 1370 to 1353 BC, who taught the universal one God for all peoples. Now, we published her book, Ta Marie, Kings and Queens Names of the 18th Dynasty, and she funded the Egyptian Meditation Room mural that I painted back there in the 70s, 80s. It's dedicated to Akhenaten, which is housed at the Ruscomb Mansion Holistic Healthcare Center in the Cold Spring, Newtown. And when she passed into the spiritual dimension, she left me her legacy of ancient Egyptian artifacts, which included not only bronzes of Isis, Osiris, and Anubis, but also a ring that housed a blue faience stone from Tutankhamun's tomb, which I wear on important occasions, such as tonight. She also left me many letters from President Dwight D. Eisenhower and his wife, Mamie, which presently is they're found in our broadcast studio. See them hanging up right over there. They're over there. Yeah. All right. And as a matter of fact, she was a great admirer of President Eisenhower, and so am I. Now, you've heard me and my mentor, National Press Club journalist Joe Honig, quote President Eisenhower's farewell speech, in which he said, "My fellow Americans, this evening I come to you with a message of leave-taking and farewell, and to share a few final thoughts with my countrymen. We have been compelled to create a permanent armaments industry of vast proportions. 3.5 million men and women are directly engaged in the defense establishment. The total influence, economic, political, and even spiritual, is felt in every city, every state house, every office of the federal government. And we recognize the imperative need for this development, yet we must not fail to comprehend its grave implications. In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether salt or unsalt, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist." And that's just a tiny bit of it. Well, to my knowledge, no other president has had the courage to admit what had happened to change America from the planet's greatest republic to a nation perpetually driven to war, or as my beloved wife, Dr. Zahara, has so often said on the air, we have inherited a war economy. Tonight, we are privileged to have as our final guest this hour the great-granddaughter of our 34th President of the United States, the supreme commander of our Allied forces, who led the victory over Hitler. He kept peace, the peace, for 8 years, 1953 to 1961. Laura Madeleine Eisenhower has made considerable contributions to the Eisenhower family's legacy, but also to the new paradigm thinking dedicated to the principle of one people, one planet. Welcome to 21st Century Radio, Laura Magdalene Eisenhower.
Great to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, Laura, what would you like to share with us about President Eisenhower's farewell speech? There was a lot more to it than I just quoted.
Well, I think it's just incredible to have that to look back upon, to understand the times that we're in today. Because without a speech like that, I don't know what we would do with the things that are coming to our attention without something to gauge or something to look back on and dig into to find out more about the roots of where this is all coming from, things that we're just getting to understand more and more as far as the deeper layers of what the military-industrial complex represents. And so I'm just, you know, really grateful that he did have the courage to tell us and warn us, because it's everything that I'm about, and I continue to dig real deep to fully bring forward what that message really meant in terms of where our tax dollars are going, in terms of relations with extraterrestrials, in terms of the New World Order agendas, and everything that's compromising our freedom, and to really put focus and attention on what the solutions are, and to carry forth a similar intention of freedom, sovereignty, equality, justice, and peace. And, every time I listen to that speech, I just get more and more out of it.
Yeah.
And I know that he couldn't really convey in the message a lot of what's coming forward. But like I said, it's great that we have some clues left behind so we know where to begin. And there was a lot during his administration that reveals, you know, the state of where the roots of this really came from. Dealing with the Second World War, Project Paperclip, where the Nazi scientists move into our American government, and how the position of presidency lost its power to the power of the military and the power of the war machine, which has roots in our ancient history. So, it's incredible, you know, that movie, the documentary, Why We Fight, and so much attention on this speech that is assisting us to this day.
Well, we're going to focus on that document, but the film in this minute. But it was the military-industrial complex at that time. Now I think you have to include the media in that. Would you agree to that?
Pretty much everything. Anything that is a power structure in our world, whether it be religion, media, government, is all a part of this.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Now, the Eisenhower Institute, founded in 1983, what important work has it been carrying on?
Well, I don't really know the details of all that. I know my mother started it. I used to go in there and work on databases and do a little bit of just sort of office work there.
Mm-hmm.
But my mom and I have had kind of a hush-hush sort of relationship when it comes to this sort of thing. I do know that it has to do with public relations, foreign policy, relations between Russia and the United States, and all with the intention of peace and forming, you know, stronger alliances. She's also an author, and it originally started off as a think tank, and she was working with her husband at the time, who was a Russian physicist, and worked with the Phobos and some of the Mars rovers and some of the exploration on Mars. But as we know, a lot of this has deeper layers to it, which is sort of what I introduce. I know that they're covering very important things, but I'm just kind of adding a different dimension to it. And so I'm not quite sure the details of everything that goes on there, because there's been some shuffling of positions and a lot of changes that have happened there. There was also the Eisenhower Group that was established, and then the Center for Post-Soviet Studies. And, you know, my mom's traveling a lot and doing all sorts of things. But because I moved away when I was 17 and have been focused on my own path, there hasn't been a lot of collaboration or discussion about what exactly is happening. But I know that each member of the Eisenhower family is sort of covering a different piece.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you put all the pieces together, we have a pretty full, well-rounded picture happening, but it's hard to kind of connect all the dots when we're together, because we focus so much more on family and just having fun, or else it sort of turns into a summit meeting, and we've sort of avoided that. But during these times, I think the demand for it is there, and I'm always pursuing more understanding among family members of, you know, what they're doing so that we can unite a little bit more, even though that's a little bit difficult because of the generation gap. And there was a lot that they didn't know about that we're coming into awareness of, particularly because of some of the dealings that I was up against, particularly in 2006 when I discovered more about the secret space program and things about Mars. So it's kind of a complicated thing, but there's a lot that my mom has been doing, and like I said, it's evolved and shifted and changed. So where it was in the 1980s and where it is today, I think are pretty different, and I'm not quite sure fully what those differences are to articulate enough.
When did you decide to become involved in reawakening the American people to the importance of his final message to our nation, which he loved so dearly?
It's just been sort of an all-the-time, my-whole-life type thing. I mean, from the time I was 6 years old, I was paying attention to, wow, how did I end up in this family, and what does this mean, you know, knowing what I came in with, knowing a little bit, well, I know I was six at the time. I didn't have the total download of what I was there to do, but I was extremely empathic and very sensitive, and I knew that there was an extreme imbalance happening on the planet. I could tell there was a lot of programmings and a false power structure sort of running things behind the scenes as I was reaching, you know, the ages of 10, 12, teenage years. It just more and more came into my awareness. I was asking lots of questions. I was trying to really figure it all out, looking at what that speech means, and then digging deeper because I was seeing a lot of rumors about government treaties with extraterrestrials and all these different things that have sort of been blown off and not talked about enough, things that I've never talked to my family members about. And so I felt this incredible urgency in my nervous system and an incredible calling and responsibility to take things to the next level, to speak about things that relate to what we're really made of, what our true origins are, what we've been duped into believing, and where our higher potential and our future potential has been compromised throughout history because of things like war and enslavement agendas and patriarchy and all kinds of things that need to be called out. And it does relate to the military-industrial complex, but it also relates to the Anunnaki and things in our ancient history that connect to the office of presidency and the government and the shadow government. And so I've just been gathering pieces, you know, my whole life since I was young, and I've related some of this political stuff to the more metaphysical, esoteric things like mythology, the path of the divine feminine, the Venus transits that the Mayans understood, and what this ascension period means and what this window period of 2012 means and how it relates to where the governments are wishing to take us and what it means for us as individuals in our path towards spiritual freedom, how there's such a strong contrast and how can we best manage these differences and somehow, you know, either work together or figure out a way to establish something that we can fall back on that isn't what the government has planned for us, because my belief is that they are not looking out for our best interests, and President Eisenhower and Kennedy were probably the last ones that were really paying attention to the needs of humanity and what's best for humanity, and I just don't see that that's been strongly emphasized enough. And so I feel that the truth movement and the whistleblowers and all those that are exposing what they can are where we need to look and kind of unplug a little bit or almost completely from the government structure that is here. It doesn't mean that we abandon it, but we restructure it and we start to figure out how we can not sit here and continue to vote for, you know, the people that they put out there, but to take the authority into our own hands, to take leadership into our own hands as individuals, so that we are not just hearing what is going to be granted to us and then feeling like it's never going to happen because none of these changes that are being promised are taking place, but to take this upon ourselves. Well, all the solutions, the unification, the path towards spiritual freedom and freedoms that relate to injustices, that it's up to the people now to see themselves as leaders. And that's why I speak out, so I can empower the human to step forward.
Well, I think that's the only way we're going to be able to change this. Now, in 2005, the Sundance Grand Jury Prize winner was Why We Fight. Who was responsible for this film? Who appeared in it? And what was its important message?
Well, I think the real important message was for us to really understand, you know, what, why do we human nature to go, you know, to war? It just doesn't seem to be something organic. I think, I'm not sure how old I was at the time. I know it's a film by Eugene.
Eugene Jarecki, I'm sorry. I know you can't possibly remember all of this stuff, and that certainly puts, you know, it's difficult to do. But, I mean, but could you continue on with especially the point that it makes in regards to the military-industrial complex and the rise of the American empire?
Well, you know, 45 years later, here we are at war in Iraq for reasons that really don't make a whole lot of sense. And so his warning about the military-industrial complex and where we stand today with what we're using our money for and the war on terror and everything connected to war doesn't really make a whole lot of sense, particularly if we had victory over Hitler. And if we're focusing on our the American people as a country, you know, why are we dragging ourselves into battles that don't really have a direct impact on the betterment of us?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot about the tax dollars is a huge thing. But, I mean, when we think about it, what was the movie about? It was interviews with soldiers, Army recruits, veterans and members of Congress and national security advisors and military strategists, and lots of different philosophies are shared. And we have to understand that because it's sort of a mainstream documentary, we're only going to get a lot of the surface layer stuff.
Mm-hmm.
As important and profound as that documentary was, I tend to dig a lot deeper than these kind of issues to kind of understand it on a level of, you know, human accountability and self-responsibility. But my gosh, to bring attention just to that speech again and to have a documentary that reawakens it in the times that we're in, I think is the best thing that came out of it. It's been a while since I've seen it, but it's really, you know, about, you know, the war machine and why we're still continuing down this path when in actual fact we should be expanding into more of a unified field and a global consciousness of looking out for each other on a level that doesn't involve war. And all these different opinions that were presented and all these different philosophies that were presented are going to be different, of course, but when you step back and look at the larger picture, there's better ways to address this. And this is what I guess, to have taken on with my path, you know, how can we address this without going into battle mode, without creating an us against them, without continually allowing ourselves to submit to the agendas that are out there while they're presented as being important and necessary, to second guess that and begin to, you know, ask the real questions, how can we avoid this and find a more peaceful way to counteract this? And to me, it's our unified field, because that represents the global immune system. And when we strengthen this aspect of who we are, the necessity of war, conflict, battle, and disease and poverty and all these injustices end up clearing up. And also the balance that we hold within ourselves and between the masculine and feminine, because we're dealing with power structures that are mostly male-dominated. And that's part of the war machine and the aggression of the way the male is programmed. So I think a documentary like that starts to trigger all these kind of thoughts as we evolve in our consciousness. You know, these things make a lot of sense as the catalyst of why we fight becomes a part of, becomes reawakened to our attention.
Well, I've now been reawakened to the attention of our first break here on 21st Century Radio with our guest, Laura Magdalene Eisenhower, the legacy of her grandfather, Dwight D. Eisenhower, and the Divine Feminine, which we'll be getting into, because obviously, as our listeners know, for the last 5-6 years, we've been working on a book dealing with that. And find links to her websites on our 21st Century Radio Facebook page, healthyfamilynow.com, cosmicgaia2012.com.
This is Rian Eisler. I'm the author of The Chalice of the Blade, the Real Wealth of Nations and other books, and president of the Center for Partnership Studies. And I've just done an interview with Dr. Bob Hieronymus for 21st Century Radio, and I've really enjoyed it. So I encourage you to listen. And I also encourage you to go to our website, partnershipway.org.
Well, thank you. Welcome back to 21st Century Radio. Our guest is Laura Magdalene Eisenhower, legacy of her grandfather, Dwight D. Eisenhower, and the Divine Feminine, which we're going to be talking about in just a few minutes. You can find links to her website on our 21st Century Radio Facebook page, or go to healthyfamilynow.com, Cosmic Gaia, and I think I better spell that, Cosmic G-A-I-A 2012.com. Laura, we have an extraordinary world-class museum in Baltimore. Its founder, Rebecca Hofberger, of the American Visionary Arts Museum in Baltimore, wants you to know that she is honoring your grandfather in the current exhibit called Human, Soul, and Machine, The Coming Singularity. Now, they play a recording on continuous loop of his presidential farewell speech, where he was first to coin that phrase, military-industrial complex, and to get the peril of merging megabucks fear and its subsequent pervasive underwriting. They also blew up a big print of his whole speech and quoted him in other parts of the exhibit. And Rebecca wants to meet with you, if that is possible, and if you can obviously come to an all-day free program with Alex Gray, Zoe, my wife, Martine Rothblatt, on March the 9th, because your presence would be most appreciated. Would you be interested in that?
Absolutely. Wow. Yeah. Just send me email information, and I'll look at my schedule. And yes, that sounds incredible.
Well, she's an incredible woman. I've known this lady for 40-some years. She's very strong in many different areas, and she knows exactly, I think, what you're talking about here. Now, I guess we've got to get back here to other work. I mentioned in my introduction that you champion the new paradigm thinking dedicated to the principle of one people and one planet. One of the key components of this paradigm is the return of the divine feminine. Now, what is the divine feminine, and how is it returning?
Okay, great. Well, the divine feminine is an energy within men and women, of course, and it has to do with just the real essence of what it means to be in touch with our feminine energy, not the program version, not what we're raised to think is what a woman is. It's to move beyond the stereotypes and the generalities and just the way we have perceived it, and to go deeper and to understand that the feminine energy has everything to do with Mother Earth. It has to do with the cosmic womb, the cosmic mother. And it's an energetic, not necessarily about a female figure, but just the way, you know, nature and our physical experience is set up, because obviously things are getting birthed, things are created. There's the power of regeneration and how babies are born and they're nurtured and they thrive, you know. So the divine feminine energy is an energy beyond us, but it's also a part of who we are. It's a part of nature. It's a part of our divine inheritance. And to truly understand it, and the return of the divine feminine energies, is to really find it deep within ourselves, because it's within all of us. And it allows us to not feel, as women, that we need to become men to be equals, or the feminist movement that sort of encourages women going to war and that women have to be more like men for us to, you know, get a feeling of balance back. That's not balance, because that's still polarized in a masculine sort of a vibration of aggression and you know, power. And it's much more about understanding these two roles of the masculine and feminine, and allowing them to be like a dance, to work together in unity, to, you know, merge these attributes in a way that is balanced, which then becomes equality. Equality isn't about being the same. It's about respecting and honoring both aspects, and both aspects also exist within us. So it's also about understanding the nature of our own inner masculine and feminine energies. And for example, you know, as we see in our world, when we're looking towards, you know, female leaders, it'd be really beneficial for all of us to bring back the essence of the nurturing of humanity, the unification of humanity, understanding how to be stewards and guardians of our planet Earth, how to clean her up, how to purify the elements, how to get in touch with our creative energy, our energy that is able to regenerate and allow things to thrive, because this is how nature is. I mean, this is something we don't need to attain because it already is there. It's just something we've been blocked from, something we have, you know, sort of pushed away from our awareness. And these are crucial times for this right now, to bring the force of the mother back, not the woman who's trying to be the man, but the energies of the mother. And in a world where we're dealing with technologies that attempt to control nature, we're dealing with weather modification, geoengineering, and radiation in our oceans, and our soils are getting polluted. It's very important that we energize this part of who we are, because it has a direct impact on how we clear this and how we transform some of these insults, and also how we can view power in the world. And it's not about women taking over. It's about the masculine and feminine working side by side. And the male energy tends to be the protector. The feminine energy tends to be the nurturer. And it doesn't just mean that those are isolated aspects and that's it and that's all. There's many dimensions to this. It's about, you know, embracing all aspects of the self. It's not about, you know, putting the feminine in a box. It's about honoring the fact that we're made of all four elements, earth, air, fire, water. You know, astrology proves this. And in understanding, you know, all these different attributes, then we don't condemn or deny any part of who we are. There's the dark feminine aspect, the rage that comes with being the feminine, because of the patriarchy that she's been holding on to, and to release that rage and to channel it into something constructive to make the world a better place, and to just let what's inside of us come to the surface and be freed, instead of all these things that we're taught that tend to not honor the essence of who we truly are, that, you know, nature shows us. I mean, we know that we have a mother and father, and sometimes they're not the best examples of, you know, carrying the divine feminine or masculine energy. But we do see our father as the protector and the mother as the nurturer. Babies thrive from love and from the safety of the protection of the father. And so the reason these energies have been exiled is because it's very threatening to the patriarchal order to have us come into balance, because coming into balance means that we're empowered. It means we upgrade our DNA. It means that we are more self-sufficient, that we understand that we have the capacity to heal ourselves. We have the capacity to work with the abundance of the universe that isn't always about the money system, and that we're empowered enough to not have to look to governments and religion to find answers and leadership or guidance and protection, because in actual fact, none of those things are really looking out for us at all. So the return of the divine feminine energies is about the feminine warrior as much as it's about the feminine nurturer. It's about working in balance and harmony with the divine masculine and allowing ourselves to recognize where the male energy has been programmed to be patriarchal, to be all about domination and control and the suppression of the feminine wisdom. Because the return of the divine feminine is really the return of her wisdom and the wisdom of the emotional body and how it knows how to guide us. Because in order to know how to heal things, we have to be able to feel them. And if we cut up our emotions and our wisdom, then what are we really grappling at? We're looking at technology. We're looking at, you know, external solutions that, you know, kind of dumb us down and don't allow us to get us in touch with our dormant spiritual abilities. Mm-hmm. And this is what we're expanding into. And this is what we're waking up to. And if we're not careful, we're going to end up down a path that's all about transhumanism and about technology taking over, which is still the patriarchal mindset, which still does not honor this feminine force coming forward, which can allow us to blossom into all that we really are, because she needs a voice. She needs to come forward, because union creates everything that we could possibly need right now. Unity consciousness is where it's at, because the mentality of divide and conquer is what's allowed the negative ego to thrive in this world. And this is what war has done. This is what injustices have done. We're divided. We're conquered. We have historical resentments. We're still focused on, you know, who are our enemies and who, you know, and it's just like we're not meant to be so divided, but these agendas have purposely divided us so that we're weakened and easily controlled. And if we can just look at each other and honor, you know, our soul and our spiritual essence and just the truth of what we're really made of, and we come together and we rely on each other and our own gifts and abilities, then we starve these parasitic energies and these systems that are feeding and preying upon our ignorance. And it's ignorance that they've taught us. You know, we're born into this. And so it's really important that we get in touch with it, because we're the free energy technology. We're the most advanced technology. And they're using our energy as a weapon against us when we give our power away. And so the feminine returning has to do with, you know, embracing the mystery, being in the now, and being in co-creation with the elements and manifesting based on those laws. They're universal laws. They have nothing to do with law and the judicial system, which is very unfair in a lot of ways. Justice is never really done. The distribution of wealth is completely out of whack. The atrocities are still there just like they were, you know, hundreds of years ago. Nothing has really improved. And so this is what the return is all about, is to really get in touch with what we're really made of, to allow that to be what we represent in the world, and to notice that miracles happen, transformation happens, alchemy happens. And we got to start with what's organic, not with what's been thrown at us, because most of it is leading us down the wrong road.
Well, good job. Excuse me, I shouldn't have said it that way, but good job. Good balance is the key, as far as
yes.
I'm concerned. Now, what part do you see yourself as playing in the return of the divine feminine?
Wow. Well, at a very young age, I launched on a very, very intense journey. I didn't fully understand it. I didn't even know people wrote about it. But I considered it to be the path of the labyrinth, going into the dark night of the soul or the underworld journey, and journeying through just all this different terrain of where the gatekeepers are, where technologies are trying to block us, and just really going on this sort of very multidimensional journey. And I know that sounds a little bit odd, but it was really intense, and it took about 20 years of just navigating through all these different layers, things that are unseen to us that we don't even recognize. And it was all about rebirthing myself out of the matrix and back into the physical on my own terms. Because so often we're born into situations where there's expectations from society, from our parents, from our teachers. And, I mean, do we really have career counselors that point out who the shamans and high priestesses are? No. We're educated to become doctors or lawyers or these other kind of jobs. And our shamans and priestesses and those that really carry a lot of spiritual information and knowledge and wisdom are kind of projected upon or considered crazy, and some are medicated, and it's like, and our elders are putting nursing homes, they have Alzheimer's, and it's like, wait a second, something's not right here. So the role I feel I play is to, you know, be courageous, to be brave, to go into territory that most would dare not journey into, to come out the other side and say, hey, this is what can happen. We can transform. We can create alchemy. We can go through dark terrain and find our power again, because we're not taught to embrace our power. We're taught to fear it. That's why we give it away. We're not given time to take off, to really journey inside the self and get to know who we really are. So a lot of my path has been about taking that time, you know, going on these inner journeys, going, you know, my background's in wilderness education, wilderness expedition leadership, actually. And so I spent a lot of time in the wilderness, learned everything from nature. And that's Mother Earth. And so I bring a lot of that knowledge forward of what I learned, what I experienced, what my own personal path has led me to, how I broke free of a lot of dark agendas that wanted to use me, maybe because I'm a part of the Eisenhower family, but I was also targeted because I do empower the divine feminine, and of course they don't want that. So I'm just here to just stand up and be empowered and to be fearless and just to say, hey, let's do this, people. Let's not live in this facade anymore. Let's be who we are. Let's be ourselves. There's no right or wrong way to do it, just as long as it's true to you. Follow your heart. Follow your passions. Embrace what you're made of. And just to be a person to inspire others and to empower others to take on a similar, you know, path, you know, maybe not as heavy and as dark as mine was, but enough to say, hey, if I can do it, you can do it. And I also do session work. I do readings. Knowing that I'm encouraging this in our humanity, for a living, I counsel people and I do readings and session work so that they have a hand to hold, so that they can understand it and not get lost in it, so that they know that they have a place to go to, somebody who understands. I do astrology, I work with tarot, I do soul-centered astrology, and I use different tools to assist the person in breaking free of programmings, conditionings, limitations that keep them stuck or in disease or imbalance. And because I knew on my journey, it was so lonely and isolating. I said, if I ever get out of this alive, I'm going to do this for a living and help people on a path that's similar. And so, one is talking, you know, being an international speaker about my path and about hidden layers of the military-industrial complex. I'm also a whistleblower, and then as a day job to really assist beings on a personal level, to help, you know, to integrate the information I have and to also feel that they can take the road of self-discovery and self-awareness and empowerment. And that's pretty much what I do. And just to really allow my human vessel, my human embodiment, to be a vessel for spirit to work through, because the greater intelligence needs us to listen to it and to work through us, and it is still a part of us. And so everything that's connected to that is what I'm about. And also, you know, educating the masculine energy to embrace the feminine within them, and to encourage the feminine to drop any victimhood or any resentments in the past, and to move forward and to just be more empowered and stronger to, you know, say, I'm not going to be a victim anymore. I'm going to be a warrior, and I'm going to stand up for myself, and I'm going to learn to say no, and I'm not going to, you know, enable this domination and control to exist any longer.
Well, we got some domination and control right now. We got to take our final break of the hour with our guest, Laura Magdalene Eisenhower, legacy of her grandfather, which we've talked about, Dwight D. Eisenhower, and the Divine Feminine. And you can find links to her website on our 21st Century Radio Facebook page, HealthyFamilyNow.com. HealthyFamilyNow.com, Cosmic Gaia, Cosmic Gaia 2012.com.
Hello, this is Ingo Swann, the author of Penetration, The Question of Extraterrestrial and Human Telepathy. And you're listening to the wonderful 21st Century Radio with the amazing Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
Oh, Brother Ingo, we sure do miss Brother Ingo. You know, I remember when he broke those stories of his being on the moon, and his seeing other beings on the moon doing stuff, and other buildings on the moon, etc., etc., etc. Yeah, extraordinary soul, Ingo Swann. Our guest right now, to the end of the show, is Laura Magdalene Eisenhower, legacy of her grandfather, Dwight D. Eisenhower, which we covered last segments. And we also talked about the Divine Feminine. You can find links to her websites on our 21st Century Radio Facebook page, HealthyFamilyNow.com, CosmicGaia2012.com. Laura, making cities more ecological is a main focus of your mission. Why do you believe this is of mega importance, and how can it be brought into the mainstream?
Well, good question. How can it be brought into the mainstream? That's the thing. There's so many people that are working on behalf of, you know, just having technology work in harmony with nature, you know, technologies that have to do with sound, vibration, and color, and, you know, things like permaculture and just ways to just be way more sufficient and abundant with less focus on survival and more focus on just having our needs met, which gives us time and ability to expand into all that we are, chakras beyond just our survival. It's extremely important because when you think about just everything that our fossil fuels are doing to the planet, and everything that, you know, that's happening when we have free our availability of free energy, it just doesn't make any sense because nothing is contributing to the health and well-being of our planet. It's just pollution, and there's ways that we can not create toxicity for ourselves and for the environment, and we have that knowledge. There's cures for cancer out there that they're hiding from us. Everything has to do with dependency. This is why these changes aren't happening, and the dependency has to do with us not being at our peak health, us, you know, continually creating a problem, which they keep introducing, you know, a solution that's not really a solution. It's similar to just getting treated by pharmaceuticals, which create more symptoms that we end up having to treat, and it has nothing to do with dealing with the root of the problem. So we keep chasing our tails, you know, treating symptoms after symptom, thinking that it's actually making things better, when in actual fact, we got to start from scratch and really build a foundation that works right, that is in harmony with nature, where, you know, we're not producing pollution, we're producing energy that, you know, raises the vibration of our planet. But, of course, they don't want that. If they did want that, they would be doing this. They're sitting on so many technologies that they don't disclose to us. They throw us the occasional cell phone or iPad, while they're sitting on technologies that would make most people's jaw drop. And it's almost difficult to handle some of these truths that are coming in, but they're there. And it's robbing us of an incredible future. And the thing is, they're not too concerned about the pollution because they are dealing with all the billions of dollars. All the elitists, you know, have the ability to kind of protect themselves from what we're being assaulted with. And that's why these changes aren't being introduced. And so no matter what we do, those that have the solutions are being ignored, and those that continue to play this game that are introducing transhumanism and a way to plug us into artificial intelligence where the solutions come from merging man and machine in sort of a mind control technology where we're more like zombies, you know, that are kind of in this spiritual enslavement without realizing it. That's the road they want to take us down. The one that we're, you know, trying to establish has everything to do with technology and nature working together, us being able to raise our vibration and expand into our multidimensional nature. They don't want that because then we wouldn't be feeding the money system. We wouldn't be feeding the war machine. We wouldn't be spending our tax dollars on hidden agendas we don't even know. And so everything is about us staying dependent. And when we're dealing with things like vaccinations and all sorts of things that actually produce poor health, that's another example. And from the most micro story, how it affects us on an individual level, to the way our cities are established, to the way, you know, our world is, you know, functioning with things like chemtrails being sprayed in the sky, we are dealing with a new world order agenda that we're seeing manifest right in front of our eyes. So many people don't want to look at it. It's almost too horrifying to even think that this is being done to us. It's much easier to be in denial and call people like me crazy, but it's right in front of our eyes. We're seeing it. It's in the skies. It's in, you know, it's in our food. It's GMOs, you know. And so why would our – it's obviously like in our cities too. And we're thinking of the superhighways, you know, pulling, you know, us away from the farms and into the cities. It's also another form of control because Monsanto and the whole agenda of geoengineering is – to completely rob the farmers of being able to really work with nature in the way they know how, but it's to sell seeds that they have to buy every year. And nothing is about us living in harmony with nature. It's everything about them controlling the way we relate to nature and making us a little bit crippled in the process so that we're constantly depending on them so that they feed on us like a parasite. And so this is why my focus and attention is on these causes, but it's going to be a difficult one to pull off unless we all join together and demand that our leaders address this and that we call out, you know, these agendas that they're not explaining the reasons why they're happening. Nobody's answering our questions about chemtrails. Nobody's asking the questions either enough in our government structures or in anybody that's in politics. All these excuses are being made. Oh, it's just this, or it's just that, or it's for global warming, or it's for this reason or that reason. And none of it makes any sense. The fact that we're being sprayed, the fact that there's weather modification, the fact that all the storms that we're seeing are turned into superstorms via HAARP technologies and chemtrails, and it's crippling our ability to live in harmony with nature. So as much as I'm an advocate for it, I'm also needing to expose the reasons why these sort of movements are being largely ignored.
Well, you note that EMFs, or electronic magnetic pollution, is the number one killer of children under 15 years old and those between 20 to 40 years old who suffer from cancer with wireless technology, especially cell phones. What are your solutions to this deadly problem?
Well, sound healing, because everything's about frequency. Everything's about frequency. There's something called the Rife device that actually, you know, heals the physical body based on frequency codes, you know, that relate to a certain disease. So same thing with things like, you know, technologies that are emitting dangerous things. There's things called Q-links, things that you can put on your phone to neutralize and deactivate some of the harmful emissions coming from it. We've got smart meters. You know, most houses have smart meters, so how do we deal with smart meters? Everything's about frequency disruption to cross our signals so that we're not really coming from, you know, our true essence. We're actually being interfered with so that it's easier to argue, it's easier to fight, it's easier to get sick, it's easier to have weakened immune systems. And so sound healing, you know, Q-links, like I said, people who are, there's people out there that are making music right now and are doing energy work that can be a stronger frequency than what these devices are. And it can, you know, override the harmful effects of what it's doing, things like organite, things like for example, there's a musician named Mark Romero, and he produces music that can balance energy fields and create harmony. And so we play this around the house a lot because we have a smart meter. And when we notice that our energies are getting a little bit frayed or we're starting to argue or things are getting a little bit testy, we put this music on and it clears the energy. Working with essential oils, working with energy medicine, anything to keep our frequency protected and to keep our physical bodies sort of shielded from this stuff, you know, is helpful. So anything from sound healing to, you know, devices that you can look up online, Organite, you know, there's ways to counteract it. But also, you know, recognizing how, because it's an attack on frequency or frequency manipulation, how are we behaving in response to it? How are the dynamics between our relationships? You know, how do we relate to our children and ourselves, you know, and to start to do the inner work, because our frequency is much stronger than these things. But if we constantly, you know, become the victim to it, or we allow ourselves to be in constant reaction to it, or we're unconscious to the fact that it's even there, then we're the walking product of what they are attempting to do. But when we recognize what's happening and we pay attention to the way we're responding, then we can, you know, send out a stronger signal. So, for example, if you feel an attack or a psychic attack, or you feel that technology is bringing you down, you know, take off your shoes, walk around in nature, lay down on the ground, you know, drink really good water, activate it with, you know, essential oils. Things like Himalayan salt and miracle salt, we sell them on our websites. These sort of things boost the system, boost the immune system. So anywhere we feel attacked, we have to, you know, come back with a stronger frequency in response, not in anger. I mean, it's okay to get angry, but, you know, we can't be the victim here. We can't, you know, always be in battle mode without it draining us. We just have to put our attention on the solutions. And it's the inner work. It's taking things into our body that's going to help us to detox us, to deal with the nanoparticles that are coming into us as well, and to, you know, put things on these devices that neutralize it. Okay, just to kind of make it a little bit easier, because I know that I'm just sort of throwing a lot out there, we have a newsletter that we put out once a week with all sorts of solutions. We keep adding more products to the list. Things like rose oil is the highest frequency, and it's such a higher frequency than anything out there. Any of these insults coming from technology, it is a higher frequency. You put a little bit on your wrist, you smell it every day, and you're not going to be affected by these things as much.
How can our listeners get that newsletter? Because we've only got like 30, 40 seconds now.
Okay. If you go to CosmicGaiaSophia.com, you can see where to subscribe to the newsletter. But even easier than that, which is a link I haven't given you yet, touroflove.com. That's TOUROFLOVE, touroflove.com. Very easy to remember. All our links and information is there. Products that we sell, information about raising the frequency, radio shows that we do, everything under the sun that's all about solutions, but also about bringing awareness to people and what's actually happening. So it's very solution-oriented. Check it out. And you can contact me on Facebook. You can find my contact information for any questions and how I can guide you to deal with some of these things.
Thank you very much, Laura, and we'll be talking to you right after the show. See you next week on 21st Century Radio. That is, Dr. Queen Zahara will be with you.
Tell them what you heard. We're going to make a better day.
Stimulating talk around the clock. And breaking news now on Talk Radio 680 WCBM Baltimore and WCBM.com.
Fox News Radio, I'm Bill Vitka.